when the pandemic started, you know, it's July of 2021. So going back about a year and a half, around April, I actually opened up my coaching practice for free for 3 months for April, May, and June of 2020. And I had over 100 phone calls with different entrepreneurs talking to them about that very topic. Like, the world just changed and my business just went from doing really, really well to a screeching halt. And so we had to, in many cases, just kind of circle the financial wagons, so to speak, and get an idea of, okay, we need to survive what should be a temporary event. But the uncertainty is we don't know how long it's going to last, right? My guesstimate at that time was the end of 2021, right? So how can you survive for the next 18 months or almost 2 years? I'm starting to doubt that number right now based on the what's going on.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
Hi, welcome back to the Retire Well, Retire Happy Show. This is your host, Annie Nelson. And today, the special guest on the show is Henry Duss. And Henry started his first business in 1991, selling, installing, servicing, and financing computers to large corporations. Since then, Henry founded a succession of firms in e-commerce, finance, real estate, and consumer product spaces. For much of the past decade, Henry's taken his experience as an entrepreneur and used it as a platform to coach other business owners and founders. As well, he has self-published a book on financial intelligence, and it's everything you need to know how to grow and manage your money. Please welcome Henry.
Welcome. Thanks, Anne. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. So where are you located in the world?
So I am in rural Connecticut, which for your audience, who's a whole, you know, half a globe away, I'm about 100 miles north of New York City in the USA.
It sounds like a wonderful place to be.
It is really very bucolic is the word that I use, which is a really good word. It's really pretty up here, surprisingly. I don't know why I'm surprised, but yeah, it's a gorgeous place to live.
It sounds like it's
going to
be your retirement place as well.
Well, you know, I know your show is about retirement, and I just turned 62. So here in the US of A, we have something called Social Security, which is our social safety net. And I am now eligible. So I could submit my papers to the U.S. government and start drawing money if I want to. I don't really want to. I don't really plan to, but I might. I'm fortunate to say that I don't need the money, but it is actually my money. I've been paying into it for the last almost 50 years. So it might be nice to sort of see some of it come back my way.
Yeah.
But it's not something I depend on, let's put it that way.
Well, it must be still comforting to know that somewhere down the track that if you need to or want to, you can, you've got a cushion there for your retirement.
It's a very small cushion. It would only even end its maximum benefit if you put in the maximum amount for your entire working life. The most you can get out of it is around $3,600 US, which is just not a huge amount of money. Not with the cost of living, especially when you factor in, you know, your health care. Because we don't have socialized medicine here in the United States, you have to pay for it until you get to be 65 years old, and then you can go on something that's called Medicare, right? So I'm not sure how it works in Australia. I've had clients kind of all over the globe in Canada and the UK and Europe and South America. And every country handles it a little bit different. But that's really a concern, is as you hit that retirement age, that is the one thing. The healthcare costs can really take a big bite out of your, you know, retirement plans. So something that you really have to consider.
Yes, I imagine so. In Australia, we do have Medicare, and if you're prepared to go on a waiting list for surgeries that are elective, then you are covered by the government. Any emergencies, of course, do get priority. But other than that, if you have private health insurance, well, then it's another way to go.
Yeah, you still have to supplement here in the U.S. Even if you go on Medicare, you will undoubtedly need to buy a supplemental policy that'll cover things. And you may have to wait. You know, it's part of the game. Medical costs are very, very expensive, and they go up at more than 10% a year. They well outpace inflation. So that's something to consider. And that's one of the things I talked about in my book. I mean, I talk about everything from sort of your first investments when people give you money as a child. Here in the U.S., people give you what are called U.S. Savings bonds. It's like a 30-year bond that matures at a very modest interest rate, all the way up to your last will and testament. You know, how do you plan for passing on any wealth that you have in a tax-advantaged way? A lot of things that people don't want to deal with. But as you get up there, you've got to think about it.
That's right. It's depending on which stage you're in life, but sometimes things can change dramatically, and we have to deal with things quite often, say, with an elderly parent that hasn't made the decisions for themselves. And they say quite often children are making decisions for their elderly parents in the car park at the hospital.
They may very well be. A lot of people don't make their wishes known at a lucid moment. And you don't really want to do that. You know, I targeted my book towards what I call the sandwich generation. And I said, I was actually going to title that. And I said to my wife, you know, financial intelligence for the sandwich generation. She said, oh, I like that title. What's the sandwich generation? So I abandoned that one. But yeah, those are the people who are sandwiched between elderly parents and young children, right? So on the one side, they've got to save for their kids' education. They have to save for their own retirement. And they have to be concerned about what happens to mom and dad if they didn't plan accordingly. And I know quite a few people who are subsidizing their parents as well as supporting their children. It's a tough spot to be.
So you've dealt and work with a lot of people that have businesses. So we could talk a little bit about that. And you seem as though you can help people break through the elusive revenue platform. So what do you look at? How do you help them?
Well, there's a lot of different things that we do. One of the interesting little things that I came across when I was researching my book is this concept of retirepreneurs. Here in the States, it's actually the fastest growing segment of entrepreneurship. People retire, and you know, you could ask yourself, what's a definition of retire? I'll give you an example. I just finished a course in getting a license to be a real estate broker, and I was talking to somebody who was a friend of a friend, and he had done that, and he said, "Well, look, he's a year older than me, so he's 63." He said, "I retired from this giant printing company at the age of 60. I worked for them for 39 years and I was done. And, but I didn't want to just go home and trip over the vacuum cleaner. So I decided to just get my real estate license, go out and start selling real estate." And he said, "I've never been happier. I make a lot more money than I did all those other years. Who knew?" It's entrepreneurial. He's kind of, the master of his domain in terms of how much he wants to work. If he doesn't want to work and show a lot of houses, probably not going to do a lot of deals. But if he wants to go out and hustle, he can. And that's the essence of entrepreneurship. So there's a lot of movement going on in that arena. where people discover that retirement ain't all it's cracked up to be.
Yes, it's amazing. I've heard it say a few times now that people spend more time planning their next holiday than they do thinking about what they're going to get up to when they retire.
I agree with you 100%.
So you help people avoid costly mistakes when they get into a business. So how does that work? What mistakes are they?
It starts at the very beginning. So I wrote a little piece that I give away on my website. It's called 5 Reasons Small Businesses Fail, right? And the number one, I'll jump right to the number one reason. And again, this is just one man's opinion. The idea, right? The reason that small businesses failed is if you had a dumb idea or you didn't put the necessary due diligence into figuring out whether your idea actually had validity before you just decided to jump in both feet first. And it happens all the time. And I've seen it all the time. And I've seen people in mature businesses where I go back and we start talking about the origin story of where it came from. And you realize that there were signs there that there was going to be trouble with this business. Could have been because it's a low margin business. It could be that they gravitated towards it because there were low barriers to entry. But if there are low barriers to entry for you, then there's low barriers to entry for everybody else also. So the competition within your business could be fierce and you didn't anticipate that. So there's a lot of things that can go wrong before you've ever done 1 cent of business. So my feeling is you should kill the monster before it grows up, right? Sometimes you just have to do that. I tell people, look, don't fall in love with your idea because that will put blinders on. The number two reason is hiring. Hiring is very difficult. I just had a conversation this morning with a client about how difficult it is to hire the right people. People hire for the wrong reasons, or they hire friends, or they hire family. And the problem with hiring family is you can't fire them, right? Well, you can. Sometimes there are repercussions. And I've worked with quite a few people who are in family-run businesses, and it's a whole different dynamic. Yet I just found out that a friend of mine, he wasn't a client of mine, but he founded a business with his father about 25 years ago, and he just sold it for, you know, significant 8 figures, you know, a lot of money. So there are plenty of success stories. I'm not trying to dissuade anybody from entrepreneurship. If your goal is material wealth and money wealth, the fastest route is entrepreneurship, but it's also the riskiest. And you have to decide if that's what you want to do. Now, the paradox is when you get older, you probably want to de-risk, right? Yes. I'm a stock trader. So people will tell you that you should reduce your exposure to the stock market because it's risky as you get older, because you don't have the time to make up any sort of shortfall if there's a catastrophic failure, like when, you know, COVID came, even though it's more than recovered. It could have gone a lot of other ways. And that's true. But if you're intelligent, if you have financial intelligence, you don't really worry about that. You might worry about it, but you understand the risks and you understand how to manage the risks. And there's ways to do that. But you know, that's probably a whole nother podcast to talk about how you manage risk in your retirement portfolio.
Okay. So you must come across a lot of businesses that are just surviving. So how does that... Can you give us a couple of hints about how you help people go from surviving to thriving?
When the pandemic started, it's July of 2021. So going back about a year and a half, around April, I actually opened up my coaching practice for free for 3 months for April, May, and June of 2020. And I had over 100 phone calls with different entrepreneurs talking to them about that very topic. Like, the world just changed. And my business just went from doing really, really well to a screeching halt. And so we had to, in many cases, just kind of circle the financial wagons, so to speak, and get an idea of, okay, we need to survive what should be a temporary event. But the uncertainty is we don't know how long it's going to last, right? My guesstimate at that time was the end of 2021, right? So how can you survive for the next 18 months or almost 2 years? I'm starting to doubt that number right now based on the what's going on. I don't know what the vaccination situation is like in Australia, but here in America, pretty much everybody who wants to be vaccinated has gotten vaccinated at this point. And it's barely 70% of the population. And that's not good enough. That's not good enough for this to be over. So now I've been kind of readjusting my sights to say it's probably going to be more like 2023 or beyond, unless dramatic action takes place. And that action has to come from the top. And I'm not holding my breath for that to happen. So you, as the entrepreneur, you need to look at a couple of things. One is you got to get your house in order, right? So that you can survive this. And you also have to look for ways that you can, here's that word, pivot, right? Is there something that you can pivot into or pivot away from in your current offering that, well, maybe has some greater possibility of traction in this new environment? So there were a lot of folks who were in the travel-related businesses whose businesses just came to a screeching halt. And now the travel is starting to loosen up a little bit. You have to ask yourself, okay, what can I do to assuage people's fears about traveling? How can I change my offering? You know, for instance, we're supposed to go to Kenya in January, 6 months from now. And I'm not optimistic about us being able to make this trip. So I think there are lots of opportunities in the travel insurance business, right? If that's something that people are offering, there may be a potential for profit centers and anything that you can do to give your customers a greater comfort level that you've got their back. That's a positive thing, mm-hmm. right? So you have to look for money-making opportunities in areas that you may not have been part of your core offering or that you may not even have familiarity with, but you better get yourself familiar with it.
I think people's ideas of where they feel safe to go will change a lot in the foreseeable future.
They're changing every day. They're changing every week, right? I mean, and governments are changing how they handle things. So that's just one example of an industry that was, you know, hit pretty hard. There are other opportunities here in the States. Certainly, I don't know what the real estate situation is like in Australia, but here it's gone crazy. You know, we just bought this house 6 months ago and they had 10 bids for it in 24 hours.
Mm.
Right? We had to pay more than the asking price.
Yeah, the time on the market has come down for most listings. And
sure.
The areas away from the capital cities has gone up.
Yeah, well, that's what happened is because people realize that, you know, we can be just as productive by working remotely. We need more space because it's just too crowded having so many people in a small space. So the combination of that is, all right, well, let's move 30 kilometers away from our office, but we'll get a little more space, a little more, you know, bang for our buck, as we say, and we can do this remotely. But that may change too, right? You're seeing corporations, at least here in the States, that are starting to bring people back to the office. They're spending tens of millions of dollars on office space. You got to believe they're going to want you to use it, right? Mm. They can get greater productivity out of that. Otherwise, what's the point of having the office?
Mm.
Other companies, however, have realized that, you know what? My costs drop dramatically if I run people remotely. You know, I'm not paying for their computers. I'm not paying for their internet. I'm not paying for their electric, right? Mm. They're covering all that cost. They're covering all my infrastructure costs. I don't have to cover that anymore.
Mm.
Right? They just offloaded their expenses to their employees. Right? Your home became your office. Although I remind people that it's not a home office. You're living at the office.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, our work environment has certainly changed. I know my son's been working. He works for the federal government here in Australia. He's been working from home since well over a year, and he's only mm-hmm. been to the yeah. office a couple of times.
No, I have two of my kids here working remotely.
Mm.
My youngest is at university, and he was doing remote classes. hopefully this coming semester, he'll be able to get back to the classroom and things will get back to some kind of a normal. But they're requiring to get vaccinated, which is important. They need to. Institutions have to take the lead and say, look, you don't want to get vaccinated, no problem, but you can't come here.
Well, I think that will be something in the future too. I imagine some countries could be saying in the future, well, you can come here as a tourist, but you've got to show that you've been vaccinated, number one, because at the moment Australians have had a very low uptake to getting vaccinated, but they're starting to change their minds now. But it's going to take the rest of this year or into next year before we have a lot higher vaccination rate.
Africa's at 1% right now. So I told my wife, I said, don't get your heart. This is for her 60th birthday, because we're going on a safari. I said, you know, I know it's 6 months away, but it's 1% now. How big you think it's going to be in January? So I don't know that I want to travel there and then find out that I have to quarantine, even though I'm vaccinated. And there are now breakthrough cases. I just had lunch with a friend of mine who had the vaccine and got COVID. And he said, I had 103 fever for 4 days, even though I was vaccinated. So, you know, it's crazy stuff going. So we have to hunker down a bit more.
Yes, and be careful and probably go about our daily lives completely differently for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's been great having you on the show and hearing you share some of your financial intelligence. How do you work with people, Henry?
Well, the funny thing is that I'm currently not, I don't want to say that I'm retired, although wouldn't that be ironic, but I'm currently not taking any new clients on for the foreseeable future. I sort of have things where I want them to be, and if there's some attrition at this juncture, I'm not really planning on replacing them. So it's kind of odd. So for the first time in like 40 years, I don't really have anything to sell other than myself, but I'm happy to talk to people. They can go to my website, which is Henry Daas, henrydaas.com, and they can download my book for free. There's a link right on my personal page there. I mean, I do sell a course, but again, I have a waiting list for that. So it's not open right now. But they can read the book. There's a lot of valuable information. It is, you know, it is American-centric, but I think there's a universality to financial intelligence that kind of transcends nationalities. You know, money's money. There just may be different rules that apply in your home country that, you know, don't apply here in the U.S. and vice versa. But I think there's a lot of, you know, common sense stuff that works for anybody in any situation.
All right. And
at least I hope so.
Do you have some tips before we finish up? Some tips for a retirepreneur?
Tips for a retirepreneur? Yeah, do it, right? Go out there, not to sound like a Nike commercial, but yeah, go out and investigate. I mean, something like a franchise, right? There are tons and tons and tons of franchises out there. Some of them that are new and, you know, quite inexpensive, don't have a lot of barriers to entry. They bring a lot to the table, right? As close to a turnkey business as you can get. And there are scores of them out there. It's a very easy way. So you don't have to, you know, rack your brain trying to come up with an idea. You can go look at ideas that other people have come up. And for, in many cases, just a few thousand dollars, you can become a franchisee. They give you the branding. They give you the marketing. They may give you a territory. They give you training. There's a lot to that. And you can learn quite a bit about business without actually having to figure all that stuff out for yourself. Because, you know, having done it a whole bunch of times, it ain't easy. It's a lot of fun and it's very rewarding. But if you can shorten the learning curve, that's important. That's what I do as a coach, is I'm taking people with established businesses and helping them shorten the learning curve to getting to the next level.
Well, thanks very much. It's been great having you on the Retire Well, Retire Happy show. This is your host, Annie Nelson, and we've been listening to Henry Daas. Thanks very much, Henry.
Thank you, Annie.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.